Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. In today's episode, we speak with AnchorWatch co-founder Becca Rubenfeld. AnchorWatch is a custody and insurance provider that is shedding light on a, until now, much neglected part of the Bitcoin industry. Becca gets into the ins and outs of the product that they have built and why they believe that it will be an important cornerstone of Bitcoin's next phase of growth and adoption. We hope you enjoy, and as a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz, joined with co-host Lim Berstow. Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming Becca, co-founder at AnchorWatch. Becca, thanks for making the time. I know it's a particularly busy time as you are now officially open for business. Some big news recently, which we'll get into. So let's dive right in. You know, welcome.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to talking with you because this is something that's very new in Bitcoin. And I think as Bitcoin's price continues to escalate, more and more people are thinking about how to protect their Bitcoin assets. But before we dive into AnchorWatch and what you're doing, we'd love to hear a little bit more about your backstory. I think that always adds some context about how you became, because you have a very strong corporate, traditional corporate background.
Yeah.
And so how did you become, number one, attracted to Bitcoin, but also want to focus all your time and energy on working in Bitcoin?
Yeah, I did a pretty hard turn. So my background, as you point out, is very big corporate America. So I spent about my first 10 years of working, I worked at Target and American Eagle Outfitters, and I did retail apparel. So I was a merchant and a planning manager, which means we're choosing the styles that go into stores, as well as building the entire financial plans for those. So profitability, pricing, all of those things. I really enjoyed it because it was a combination of the financial side as well as kind of the creative side. And even though it was very specific to apparel, it gave me a lot of reps in putting things out in front of customers, in front of consumers, and really quickly judging if they like something or don't, and kind of calibrating, you know, the next products to meet what customers are asking for. You know, it was actually a big dollar environment. I managed, I think, up to about $450 million at American Eagle Outfitters. So it was a lot of autonomy. You know, it was very fast and a lot of fun. Then I moved over to Starbucks, and I worked at Starbucks corporate, for another 10 years. And, you know, I expected to be doing really the exact same thing, but moving from clothing over to coffee. And what I found is Starbucks was organized more like a manufacturing company. So it was a little more siloed in responsibilities. So there I actually had the opportunity to move around and do different things. So I did a little bit of time in supply chain. I had a really exciting few years where I was launching concept stores and doing all sorts of really interesting tests, working with the most senior management and executives and kind of launching their pet products. Had opportunity to launch Howard's projects, which was really fun and interesting. And then from there, my last few years at Starbucks, I built and then ran the largest fintech program in the company. So it was all of the company's outbound spend. It was about $20 billion moved through the program annually. And it was just very big and complicated. 10,000 employees spend company money, 16,000 suppliers received money, lots of different tech systems were integrated, and really getting people to change their behavior and do something differently. So that ended up being very good preparation for building a regulated insurance company from there. So I actually took a lot from that. And then in terms, though, of the Bitcoin connection and how this all kind of ties together, I had been trading Bitcoin without knowing too much about it in 2019. So a friend had pointed out to me that the price had crashed quite low and it was maybe a good buy opportunity. We traded stock tips frequently, this friend and myself. And so I started trading it, and I was just kind of swing trading it. It was range bound. It was kind of between $6,000 and $8,000, and I was trading in and out and doing okay. I was pretty pleased with myself, and without any deep knowledge of it though. And then at some point the price took off. I think it went up by 40% in a couple of days, and I was out of the trade with about 2/3 of my position. So it took off. I missed the boat on 2/3 of my position, and I was just like, oh, too bad, you know, but I had a good run. And then the next year, 2020, we were in COVID, and the app Clubhouse came out. And so I got an invite to Clubhouse. I hopped in, and there wasn't too much going on, but there were these Bitcoin rooms. And so I hopped in really just trying to get trading alpha. That's all I was hoping for, is like, well, when's the price going to come back down so I have another entry? But I ended up listening into these rooms, and I didn't know who anybody was because I wasn't connected to the industry at all. But it was NVK from CoinKite. It was, you know, Jimmy Song. There were core devs, CEOs of a variety of Bitcoin companies were hanging out in there. Miners were in there. So really, like, people from every aspect of the industry. And what became very obvious to me is that they were brilliantly smart, just as a group. I was like, I don't know who these people are, but they are smart. There's raw intelligence here in a concentration that was really interesting and enjoyable. We were all working from home because of COVID. So I would just have this on in the background while I was working here out of my home office. And so I just kind of inadvertently, just because I was enjoying their intelligence, waiting for trading alpha, just kept hearing these tidbits and explaining Bitcoin. And so I ended up on stage, and I could ask my own questions directly. So I ended up getting this master class because I could learn at my own pace very quickly from these amazing experts, like the top of the top in the industry. And so I could ask a question, you know, why, like, if that's how mining works, you know, why don't more people just mine then? Like, and so then somebody could be like, ah, good question. That's the difficulty adjustment. I'd be like, I don't know what that means. They'd be like, okay, well, the difficulty adjustment, and they would explain that. And so then I could immediately ask another follow-up question. And if I didn't understand the answer to the question, somebody else would jump in and be like, here, let me try to rephrase it for you. And they would rephrase it in a way that made sense to me. So really quickly, I was orange pilled just because I had this amazing opportunity to learn from, you know, these people who know more than anybody. And because of COVID, there was this period of time that they were spending 12 hours a day willing to share their information. So I met Rob, you know, my co-founder at AnchorWatch. I met him on Clubhouse. And over the course of a year or two, we had become friends. And really, I'd gotten to know all these guys. And one day, there was a conversation about insurance. Actually, June Seth, if you're familiar with June Seth, was talking about how, you know, just insurance is lacking. It needs to exist. It's one of the things that's missing from the Bitcoin industry that would allow it to mature as an asset class. And so we were talking about it, and Rob, who is technical and has been in Bitcoin since, I believe, 2013, and had learned to code just because of his interest in Bitcoin, he was thinking about it, and he's like, you know, if I were going to do insurance, here's how I would build on the tech side. And so they were talking about that. And so very quickly, a lot of these guys on Clubhouse were saying, like, Rob, why don't you just do that? Like, insurance needs to exist. You know how you want to build it. So why don't you build it? Like, we'll back you. And so all of a sudden, the company was born coming out of this conversation. He had a couple of angel investors at his back. I actually first invested So that was my entry into the company. It was I threw in along with these guys as an angel investor. And then because I was friends with Rob and I wanted him to be successful for that reason. And of course, I had just invested, so I wanted him to be successful for that reason. I was like, okay, Rob, you'll need a pitch deck. You need a pro forma. How's your knowledge on insurance? And he was fingers on keyboard, just frantically trying to build his MVP, build the tech side. And I was like, you know what? I'll just help. Like, keep building the MVP. I can pull up. I can make a pitch deck for you. I can spin up a pro forma in my sleep. So here, I'll just take care of those things. You keep building. And so over the course of a week, we were in close contact. And so as I was building these things for him, and we were just working really well together, I pulled one, maybe two all-nighters that week. Which I hadn't done since probably university. And it was just so fun. We were having a great time. It was exciting. It was a cool product. The more I researched, the more bullish I was on the idea. And so after just helping him out for a week or so, I was like, Rob, I would do this with you if you want me to. Like, what do you think? I'll leave Starbucks. Let's build AnchorWatch. So I joined on as co-founder and COO after about a week. So I've been with them for all but the first couple of days, which is exciting. So that's how the company got going. So we're very much a clubhouse company in origins.
I love that story. And that's how I first was introduced to you. I was back in Clubhouse in 2020 and 2021 too, and
you were in the audience listening.
Yeah.
On stage too?
Yes, I would get on stage. And I had been in Bitcoin since 2013, but I didn't have any community around it. Mm-hmm. And so I had been in early stage tech and VC, but I was also lacking a lot of these, who's who and the technical and the core devs. I mean, I just didn't, I looked at it as a technology, but just didn't.
I have a lot of respect for you and other early investors, early adherents, because I respect how much effort you would have had to put in to learn, right? So, I mean, I hear stories about, people pouring through forums and really having to do a lot of research to learn about Bitcoin. And like, then there were some books, but like maybe two or three books out there. And so you really had to be passionate from a very early point to put in the level of effort. And I feel really lucky that I happened into this group, because I'm not kidding. I think I got this masterclass, which just accelerated that process. Like, it's really lucky that I was able to get the amount of knowledge that I got over the course of, say, 6 months that probably would have taken people years if they were really diving through forums to try to get that same information. It was a blessing.
Yeah. And just the whole delivery. And Israel also, he was created a company early on for remittances in Bitcoin around 2013 or 14. So,
To your point, Beck, I mean, it is interesting because now that you were just mentioning that, today my primary sources of education and just continued research is, podcasts, books, x.com, and none of that actually you had in those early days. We are lucky to have all that tool set. And I mean, but to your credit, it sounds like you saw the opportunity and didn't hesitate. I mean, you went right into this.
I mean, definitely true. I would say both true on the Bitcoin aspect as well as the AnchorWatch aspect. I think on the Bitcoin side, I tell the story of that I was primed for Bitcoin in something like 1992 or something, because I have this memory of being around 9 years old. I'd have to go back and look at a chart to figure out the exact age. But somewhere around that age, elementary school, we were watching Nightly Business Report during dinner. My dad's a business professor, so that was a normal thing. We would watch business news. I was interested from a young age. But on this day, the national debt had hit $3 trillion. Okay. So it hit $3 trillion. That's what the news story was about. And on the screen, there was a chart of the national debt, and it was, parabolic shaped. So that shape was evident. And even though I didn't necessarily understand the math, I did understand debt. I was raised where we talked about, being fiscally irresponsible. And so I understand that if you borrow money, it has to be paid back. And I asked my dad, I was like, how are we ever going to pay this back? Because you could look and even without a mature language, you could just see that it's accelerating and it's not paybackable. And my dad, who I was used to always having the answers for any questions I would ask, he was just like, I was like, no, but really, like, how are we going to pay it back? Even when I'm grown up, how will we ever pay this back? And he was just like, I don't know. And so my whole life, by the time I was 14, I had decided I was going to major in finance. My whole life, I'm just, at some point, if the world is built on bad math, if the United States' dominance in the world is built on bad math, on debt that won't be repaid, someday that all has to break. I don't understand, but someday this will all fall down if it's built on bad math. And when I got Orangefield, it was just like,
You hit on a key point and something I think that's worth kind of highlighting as far as just kind of a lesson that's pretty valuable, because you need to be prepped kind of what you're speaking to. And if it wasn't for your curiosity or being an independent thinker, you wouldn't be set up for being able to take those opportunities. It kind of reminded me when I was going through university was during the 2008 financial crisis, mm-hmm. and the Obama era, and they started speaking in my econ class, because I studied econ and math, about this, quantitative easing. And I remember, to kind of similar to your story, as far as being prepped for it, kind of questioning back then, this just sounds like a bunch of fancy terms, but just looking at it objectively, I mean, it just sounds like they're injecting a bunch of money and printing a bunch of money that I'm not sure how, I remember it smelled off back then. And then a few years later, you come into something like Bitcoin, and of course, maybe just clicks a little.
It validates that something is off. And then as you then learn Bitcoin, it presents itself as a potential solution to this problem. And from my point of view, the only viable potential solution. There's not another one out there that I know of that is out there to offset that money printer. So
my background was, my first career was Wall Street in Merrill Lynch, okay. and it probably contributed to the downfall of the financial system.
Don't worry, I had an internship there also. So
But what clicked also for me, it was, I had been living in Mexico for a number of years by the time I was introduced to Bitcoin, and had gone through a devaluation, had gone through trying to send money. And so I was looking at it as practical rails, like a better, coming from the US and having these easy facilities. So I totally missed the macro part of it at the beginning. And that's what I kind of picked up in 20, when we were going through the money printing and the distribution of checks as an economics major, is like, this can't be sustained. But my first practical thing was, oh, wow, we can send money easier, and it can, protect against these devaluations. So I think having lived in Mexico and gone through that really eased the learning curve for me.
Yeah. To that end, I think there will come a point, hopefully in the near future, that I can't imagine being a multinational corporation without utilizing Bitcoin, even to balance your own treasury, right? Because, I know from Starbucks, for example, you have your primary treasury in dollars, but you also have additional treasuries in local currency. And you are constantly balancing those treasuries based on the needs of the business, and remitting funds back to the primary treasury. Profits and the idea of doing that without Bitcoin is so inefficient. Even just within a given company, it solves a lot of problems and saves a lot of money.
Well, it does. But Becca, I mean, bringing this back to AnchorWatch, it's like, yeah. But I think that the reason that corporations have been so slow to adapt it is how complex it is to hold it, and how the uncertainty around holding it, and how do you custody it in a large organization. So tell us a little bit about AnchorWatch and how you can help provide a solution to having secured custody.
For sure. So, I mean, you know, if we start at the very beginning, if you buy Bitcoin, most are buying it on an exchange, right? So you go create an exchange account, you buy the Bitcoin, and if you do nothing, it just sits at the exchange, right? And so you don't actually hold Bitcoin, you hold an IOU to Bitcoin. And so Bitcoin is a bearer asset. So if you think of it like a bar of gold, it's like either you hold the bar of gold or I hold the bar of gold. And so a lot of people, if they're new to Bitcoin, they'd be like, no, they can hold the Bitcoin for me. That's fine. But, you know, there are benefits. There are risks to that, right? So the custodian could lose it effectively. They can lose your keys. There can be internal bad actors. Or you can say, no, send me the Bitcoin and I want to hold it myself. But there are risks to that as well, because you can hold the keys. They can be stolen from you. If you're, say, a fairly new corporation, like you say, interested in making an allocation, you know, who do you trust on the team to hold the keys? Where are they physically stored? There's a lot of sophistication that you would want to do, in particular if it's millions and millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin that you really have to consider. So what AnchorWatch is setting out to do is create an alternative to those two things. So it's not just you're choosing between a sole custodian and holding your own keys in a file cabinet. What we have done is put together a custody solution that actually pulls together the best of both worlds. So we have a solution that is Bitcoin native technology that allows multiple entities to hold keys. And that's already out there. So there are collaborative custodians out there who say, look, I'm going to hold two keys and I'm going to hire a company to hold the third key of a multi-sig wallet. So we've split up the custody into these three keys and any two of them can sign. So what that means is ultimately it's still self-custody because the customer is holding two keys, but you have a company holding that third key in case you've lost one of the two. AnchorWatch is a little bit different. We have built on a technology called Miniscript. It's Bitcoin. It's already part of Bitcoin, so it's not our tech. It's part of the Bitcoin scripting language. But what it allows you to do is actually have multiple key sets that are all required. So instead of just being a backup key, AnchorWatch holds keys with a customer. So a company could say, we want to make an allocation. And we would say, that's great. The company would have their own multi-sig. So for example, the CEO, the CLO, and the CFO could be the three holders within a company. But AnchorWatch will also hold a key set, and we're both required signers. So it's actually a smart contract now that says if the customer keys sign and if AnchorWatch's keys signs, only then can we move the Bitcoin. And so with that, what we're really trying to do is mimic corporate governance and compliance, but encode that at the protocol level. So now we're saying like, okay, in a traditional business, they want to distribute spending authority, right, amongst multiple executives. So before you can spend above a certain amount of money, you know, the CFO and the CEO and the CLO all have to sign a document. And so we're taking that farther and we're like, yes, let's replicate that, but let's do it at the protocol level. So they literally have to sign a transaction. So we know that if this company wants to move, these guys have actually signed the transaction, but instead of a signature, they're doing it with, you know, their encrypted signature on the blockchain. And you have an outside party, in this case, AnchorWatch, who is also providing, in a way, oversight and this additional level of security. So you're kind of getting the compliance benefits of using an outside custodian without trusting the outside custodian, because AnchorWatch can never, ever unilaterally control a customer's Bitcoin. So we've built this advanced custody solution. It involves time locks that allows for recovery options in case something goes wrong, in case keys are lost. But all of that then is backed by Lloyd's of London insurance. And so again, it's just one more way we're saying, look, if large entities, whether, you know, it's like a family office or it's a huge multinational corporation, they are looking for a traditional understanding of what keeps something safe. So I just kind of did an intro to how we're doing on the tech side. And then we're just bringing in a very traditional insurance policy and putting it on there. So it's a property insurance policy, as I mentioned, backed by Lloyd's of London, 100%. We're a Lloyd's of London cover holder. And so the tech protects the customer from a huge number of scenarios. So you go through the game theory and, you know, maybe later on we can actually look at the vault and those time locks and how they work. But you can game theory through all these different scenarios and the tech protects you a lot. But there are a few things that the tech can't protect the customer from. And then that's where the insurance comes in. So there are some tail risks. And so from both sides, you're really protected to a level not previously available until we launch.
Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River. River is a Bitcoin-only financial services company, which I have personally been using for years, and I'm a big fan of the product and company.
Yeah, I'm also a big fan too. And I'm a big fan, especially when it comes to referring my friend group to start their Bitcoin journey or acquire some Bitcoin, because in addition to being a Bitcoin-only financial services company, River also has personalized customer service. So a person can actually talk to a human being if they need to when they're getting their account set up or in the process of it. I also love the fact that they have no fees on recurring purchases. And they also recently instituted a proof of reserve. So if you choose to hold your Bitcoin at River instead of self-custody, which many people do choose that, you can verify on their site that they have 100% reserve Bitcoin for every Bitcoin that you hold.
River also just launched a very interesting feature, which is a yield paid out in Bitcoin on your US dollar cash that you deposit at River. So you can hold that US dollar cash, earn that yield in Bitcoin in your account in River. And important to note, this is all through a regulated banking partner of theirs at a FDIC insured institution. So I think the River is a great partner for Bitcoin and cash deposited.
Yeah, because as much as we'd love to live on a Bitcoin standard, at least you and I, you know, we need cash to operate in the world. And so this allows you to be able to earn a very competitive yield on your excess cash and have it paid in Bitcoin if you choose and just continue to build your Bitcoin stash. So for anyone looking to start their journey, we invite you to join us at River by visiting partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
And so thanks for going through that and some of those technical components, Becca. And, you know, maybe before we move on to how it actually works and maybe you can share with us, you know, the screen there. But, sure. You know, maybe before that piece, can we try to size the problem you're speaking to right now? I mean, of course, Bitcoin has grown a lot. It's now you can't ignore it. You know, it's a large enough industry where it's clearly grabbing a lot of attention. What's the help us size the problem here? I mean, whether I self-custody or whether I kind of pass that custody off to a third-party provider who may have some insurance policies, but it's perhaps not what I think it is. Can you help us put some context?
Sure. So, I mean, first, just to level set, like think about homes out there in America. So that's an asset class, right? Residential real estate. How much of that is fully insured, you know, has an insurance policy on it? And I would imagine it's nearly all of it. Any of those homes that have a mortgage, we know have insurance because lenders don't allow you to have a mortgage without having insurance. And most people keep insurance even if they own their homes outright. So we can say, all right, the U.S. residential real estate market is, you know, X trillions of dollars. And there's effectively that same number of dollars out there of insurance available in that marketplace. With Bitcoin, you know, what's the market cap right now? Is it $1.7 trillion, some that neighborhood?
Yeah.
Somewhere like that. There is maybe $3 billion of insurance capacity available in the marketplace prior to AnchorWatch coming online. So it's effectively uninsured, despite being a bearer asset, despite being extremely insurable, because, you know, it's a transparent blockchain. The keys can be, you know, held physically. It's very insurable, but there was pretty much no insurance on the marketplace. As you mentioned, there are custodians who may or may not have insurance policies out there. But as we dug in, it became evident that calling the Bitcoin at custodian insured, you know, at least deserves further explanation to customers. So the policies that are out there at the major custodians are shared policies and they're fractional policies. So if we look at the major custodians out there on the marketplace, you know, Coinbase in particular, you know, has hundreds and hundreds of billions in their custody, and they have an insurance policy. If I remember in a press release I saw, I think it was a $350 million policy. You know, it was public information, so I might be a little off on the number, but regardless, that it's in the couple of hundred million range, maybe 350 versus 450 billion in custody, which means it's not pennies on the dollar insurance, it's fractions of a penny on the hundreds of dollars in custody. So if there's a loss, one, let's assume the loss, you know, I would assume if a loss happens, it's going to be big. If a thief comes in and figures out how to infiltrate, you know, they're very robust security, but let's say they figure it out, they're not going to stop at 350 million when there are billions and billions and billions in the honeypot. So you're going to get back at best fractions of a penny on the dollar. So, you know, the insurance is legitimate insurance. I think, you know, the quality of the policy is no doubt good. I have confidence in that. They're coming from Lloyd's of London as well. But the amount of insurance is not enough to actually provide any protection to customers. So what we are trying to do is actually flip that, and customers with us can get one-to-one insurance. So if you have a $10 million allocation of Bitcoin, you can buy a $10 million insurance policy. We can serve customers right now up to $100 million, right? And so that just simply has not been easily available for even commercial customers to get up till now. And we're insuring your specific Bitcoin as well. So we're not commingling your Bitcoin with others' Bitcoin. You have your vault, and that vault is insured with your exact UTXOs, with your exact Bitcoin. Additionally, before AnchorWatch launched this week, there were literally no options for retail customers to get insured custody, because those large custodians that do have these known insurance policies, fractional insurance policies, don't serve retail. And so there truly is no insured custody option, with the exception of AnchorWatch. And that's something we're super proud of. We could have launched, honestly, months earlier if we did not serve retail customers. So a lot of the compliance work that we were doing to launch was because we wanted to provide this service to retail customers, whether, you know, midsize or high net worth. Either way, what Lloyd's of London really expected of us was like, okay, if you want to serve retail customers, we need to look at you even more closely, because we need to be confident that you are going to take care of retail customers. We hold that to a higher standard. And so everything from our own internal compliance, how we take care of customers, the transparency and honesty with how we carry ourselves is all held to a much, much higher standard. And that was important to us, because we came at this as Bitcoiners ourselves and trying to develop a product that actually solves a problem for people and encourages them and kind of eases the fears of owning Bitcoin. If you're deciding to buy Bitcoin, no matter what, you are taking on price volatility risk, right? Like, and that's a big emotional hurdle to get over. And then on top of it, you've got, if you're using a custodian, you've got key man risk as well. So you're taking on these two really unrelated risks, but they're both potentially very high. And so with insured custody, what we're saying is like, we're actually removing that key man risk from you. So our insurance covers wrench attacks, you know, these violence, coercion to steal keys from people. It covers really a huge number of things that would cause a customer to lose keys and lose permanent access to their Bitcoin. Our policy also covers collusion that involves AnchorWatch. Because remember, these policies are Lloyd's of London policies. So even though AnchorWatch is out front, if there's a claim, you know, Bitcoin is lost, a claim is initiated, Lloyd's of London is investigating themselves. And if in their investigation they determine that AnchorWatch ourselves were the bad actor and we participated in the fraud, that is also a covered loss. So we really, really put together a policy that we think solves problems. And my personal opinion is that beyond the protection that we're giving to a given customer. So if you guys want to open a policy, you know, we're solving a problem for you as individuals, and that's great. I'm proud of that. But beyond that, I think all the Bitcoin at three custodians, I think that's a huge systemic risk to Bitcoin. But the reality is, until now, I think for a lot of companies in particular, it was still kind of the best option, right? Like, they weren't prepared to take on the full responsibility of key custody on their own. You know, the custodians have a long track record. And so all else equal, I guess we'll use the big custodian. So they put their Bitcoin there, and the other companies put their Bitcoin there, and now the ETFs put their Bitcoin there. And holy cow, now we have these honeypots and this huge concentration of Bitcoin. And I find that really, really concerning. So at a higher level, I'm really proud that we think this offering provides a viable alternative for institutional customers to put their Bitcoin in a different storage solution that we'd like to think is even higher security because of these time locks and the things that I was describing, and the only option that's backed by one-to-one insurance. So we think that over time, you know, fiduciaries will really look at all things equal. And we use the term fiduciary flight, but if you are managing large sums, whether it's for your investors or for your company, if you're a fund, if you're a family office, if you're looking at custody options and for something that's priced in the same realm of each other, one is insured and one is uninsured. I don't understand how you choose uninsured. What are you actually paying for? Right. So if you give your keys over to a company and you're like, hey, can you hold these for me? And they're like, sure. You know, here's a monthly fee. We'll hold those for you. We're super secure. We've done all this work to keep it safe. And I'm like, that's great. What happens if something goes wrong anyway? And they're like, nothing. We say sorry. But you give me my Bitcoin back, right? You make me whole. No, I don't. You're an unsecured creditor. So what are you actually paying for? The amount of data is minuscule, right? A private key is just this much data. You know, I could store that on the Google Cloud for $2 a month. So what they're doing is charging a large amount of money, and they're justifying it by saying, hey, we're charging you a lot of money because you value the data very much, because the value of the data is high. So we're going to charge you more, even though the size of the data is very small. And I don't think that makes sense. I don't think, you know, the reason that insurance costs money is that we are securing collateral on the backside. So there is a, there's a pool of capital at Lloyd's of London that the syndicates hold in reserve that says, hey, if something goes wrong, we do actually have the resources on hand that we can uphold our obligations. That, yes, so now when AnchorWatch gets a question from a customer and the customer's like, okay, the custody sounds really great, but what happens if something goes wrong anyway? And we're like, yeah, that's where the insurance policy comes into place, and we're going to take care of you. And we're going to reduce that risk of ruin to a very minimal loss, the size of your deductible and maybe some inconvenience, but you will not be ruined. Your heirs will not be ruined. And it's a huge difference. It's a game changer.
So, Becca, maybe you can kind of walk us through the kind of process somebody would go through that's interested. Sure. Like, I'm assuming, let's say that a company has their Bitcoin, or they want to acquire their Bitcoin and they're thinking they'd put it on Coinbase or another exchange. Yeah. You would, in order for it to be insured, you'd require a specific way of holding that. Can you... rather than insuring it on Coinbase where it's pooled with others. So,
Correct. Yeah. So yeah, we've built our own custody solution. So what I was describing a little bit earlier, our first policy, and we will have additional policies coming up, but the one that's live today that I can take customers immediately is custodying via Trident Vault. That's our proprietary custody solution. And it is the one that where customers hold keys and AnchorWatch holds keys. We have time lock recovery layers. And then after the policy ends, it becomes a fully sovereign self-custody solution. But assuming a customer intends to be a long-term holder, we would come together every year and we would effectively restart the clock and kind of return the vault to kind of the highest level of security. So those time locks wouldn't come into play. So we require that customers use that solution. And the reason for that is because with customers holding keys and AnchorWatch holding keys, we are able to show that one customer who has a loss actually is not systemic and it wouldn't spread across the AnchorWatch customer base because customers hold those keys. And that's why we are able to do policies up to $100 million. So if a customer was interested, it's a pretty straightforward process. It's insurance. So it's very familiar to signing up for a different insurance policy. But generally what I would recommend would be a customer reach out to us. We'd get on a call, go through the custody solution, make sure they understand the tech and the keys. And then, of course, understand the policy as well. So we'd review coverage and exclusions and costs and all those things. There's also a few things the customer can choose to manage their premium rate. So on this early call, we would go through those options. And really, the options are configurations the customer can select that is a balance of flexibility versus security. So just a really easy example of that is the customer keys, the hardware wallets that they hold. They can't be in the same building. So they have three keys. They can't be stored in the same building. If they store them at least 10 miles apart, we offer a discount. If they store them at least 100 miles apart, a bigger discount. So we would go through those options together and fine-tune their rate quote. So the pricing ranges from 55 basis points of the vault value up to about 2 points. But what we've been finding so far is that most customers are coming in at the very bottom of that range. So we would talk through those options, make sure that they're happy with the rate versus flexibility. And if they're happy with it, then we would just send them a formal insurance application. It only takes about 20 minutes to fill out. They would fill that out. We do have to do things like OFAC. And sanctions list checks. So once we receive their application, we would do those checks. And if all looks good, we will send them a welcome kit that includes their signing devices. So they don't need to be super experienced in the space. Actually, they don't need to have any experience holding keys before. We'll walk them through that process. So we send them what they need. And once they've received them, we simply just get on one last call together. and we configure their Trident Vault. We set up those signing devices with them. We give them a tour of the custody solution. We do a test transaction, just making sure they're really comfortable with it. And once they pay their insurance policy, that's an insured vault. So they're fully insured really from that point, and they can just move their Bitcoin in from that point. So if they had bought their Bitcoin on Coinbase, what I would recommend is let's go ahead, let's have these couple of calls. Let's get your vault set up. And once you're comfortable, everything's good to go, then we would say, okay, now go to Coinbase and go ahead and send your Bitcoin from Coinbase into your Trident Vault that's already insured.
Well, maybe now's a good time to go through the Trident Vault itself, Becca.
Yeah, I would love to. So yeah, it is easier to talk about it, you know, with this visual in play, because otherwise it's a little too conceptual. All right. There we go. I can see it on the screen, so I assume you can as well. So what we're looking at here is kind of the key requirements for moving Bitcoin. So this is a cold storage solution, which means everything is offline, and really just picture like a super secure vault. And so your Bitcoin is in a super secure vault, but if you need to spend Bitcoin, you have to retrieve these signing devices and actually sign transactions. And the different layers here are representing time locks. So what a time lock is in Bitcoin is actually saying, look, a vault works a certain way, but after a certain amount of time has passed, an additional way to spend Bitcoin becomes available. So over time, we can add kind of contingency plans to how we control Bitcoin, which lets you have recovery options. So you start to think, well, like, what happens if I lose a key? What happens if I lose two keys? What happens if AnchorWatch ceases to exist? What happens if AnchorWatch is a bad actor and I shouldn't have trusted them in the first place? What happens if I get kidnapped, right? And so AnchorWatch, in designing this vault, really went through this infinite number of scenarios, and we really put together a vault that we think protects from absolutely the most scenarios out there. So in brief, what this is representing is a year of your insurance policy. Okay, so this is how your vault works over the course of having a year-long insurance policy. So when we start out together, it is that multi-sig of multi-sigs. The customer has their own key set, and AnchorWatch has their own key set, and both are required signers. So when the customer wants to move Bitcoin, they would put in a transaction request. Hey, I want to send 10 Bitcoin to this address. The company themselves or the customer would sign with at least two of their keys. So it's a customer two of three. And once they have done that, then AnchorWatch does our compliance activities, make sure we feel comfortable that they're not under duress. Everybody's feeling good. This is a legitimate request. And if all is well, we also will sign the transaction with our multi-sig. So day in, day out, this is the way the vault works. The customer signs and AnchorWatch signs. Then about halfway through the policy, we have layer two, which is just saying, hey, if something wild has happened and the customer has lost two of their three keys somehow, but they still have one, then that's okay. Now the vault will function as a customer one of three and the AnchorWatch key set. So it's just like a soft recovery layer there. I'm going to skip layer three, actually, and come back to it because it's easier to explain in relation to layer four. So layer four is what we call sovereign recovery. So if you notice, there are no AnchorWatch keys in layer four. The policy, the insurance policy, actually ends right before layer four. So what we're saying is, look, once AnchorWatch no longer has liability, once Lloyd's of London no longer has liability for this vault, it's actually, you know, it is just self-custody. You guys can control it with your signing devices. As long as you have those two keys, you're still able to access the vault. We don't block. So if you stop being a customer, you let your policy lapse, you're no longer an AnchorWatch customer, we don't lock you out of Trident. But even then, even if you were afraid that you would lose access. Actually, we've built, you know, this is all Bitcoin native technology. So you could actually control your vault using Bitcoin Core. So even if we had fallen off the face of the earth, Trident is permanently disabled. As long as the customer still has their signing devices, they are able to control their Bitcoin even without AnchorWatch once the policy ends. But in having this fully sovereign layer four, that actually exposes the customer to a couple of risks. It says, well, what happens if they don't have those keys, right? And so why would that happen? So one scenario is they get, they're stolen. And I would assume if this happens, that's it's a sophisticated thief, right? But the situation would be a thief comes in and says, hey, we know you have Bitcoin. We know it's a multi-sig. You know, give me your keys or I'm, you know, I'm going to threaten your life. I'm going to threaten your children's lives and take me to where you have your keys stolen. I don't care if they're across the country, take me to them and give them to me. So the customer does, right, to save their own life. So then they call us and they say, AnchorWatch, my keys are gone. This just happened. We were kidnapped. They took my keys. And we'd say, okay, at this point, the thieves don't have anything yet. Because remember, AnchorWatch is a required signer. So right now they have your signing devices, but they don't have your Bitcoin. What we need to do is make sure that by the time your keys can control the Bitcoin in a sovereign manner, meaning the stolen keys could control and steal your Bitcoin, we need to make sure that there's no Bitcoin in that vault for them to steal. And so that's the first purpose of the recovery layer in layer three. So layer three is a layer where the AnchorWatch key set, as well as a key set held by an outside third-party company. In this case, we're using CoinCorner. CoinCorner is an exchange. They're based out of the Isle of Man, so multi-jurisdictional. And they have been in business for, I believe, more than 10 years. Bitcoin only, extremely reputable, never had a loss of keys or anything like that. So very proven partner. We could come in and be like, all right, customer, don't worry. Look, recovery layer three, let's say, opens up on June 15th. Okay. So on June 15th, AnchorWatch and CoinCorner are going to come together and we're going to move your Bitcoin to a safe location. We'll get you a whole new vault set up, brand new signing devices, and we're going to move your Bitcoin for you to this new safe location. So by the time the vault becomes fully sovereign, there's no Bitcoin to steal. The other thing I would point out would be then where does the insurance come into play? Because in what I just described, we actually just mitigated a loss, right? The theft didn't actually happen. But let's take that scenario a step farther and say, again, the thieves are very sophisticated and they say, no, no, we know that you're an AnchorWatch customer. We know that they have to sign. Convince them to move your Bitcoin or we'll kill you. So the customer says, hey, you know, we're buying a business, we're acquiring a business. You know, we'll do extra compliance. You didn't tell us that you were buying a business this year. Is everything all right? They convince us that everything is all right. We move the Bitcoin. They call us back after the Bitcoin has been moved and they say, okay, I told you we were acquiring a business, but actually that wasn't true. There was a gun to my head. We were forced to do this. That was a theft. They file a claim. AnchorWatch and Lloyds, we're going to open an investigation, of course, transparently. FBI will be engaged, right? This is a high value theft and a violent theft. And we're going to do our investigation. But when the investigation surfaces that this was a legitimate wrench attack, that this was violent coercion, that's a covered loss, right? So we're using that's an example of how the tech and the insurance interplay together through and holistically then are protecting the customer. We're saying your best case scenario is the loss doesn't happen. You don't have to pay a deductible, right? So there wasn't ever a haircut for a deductible because it wasn't claim and we avoided the loss. Or if it happens, then we have this high quality insurance to say, like, even then your risk of ruin is reduced. And the other thing that then I would call out is a different scenario. So forget the theft. The other purpose of the recovery layer I think is actually very, very applicable, especially for retail customers, though it also is applicable for commercial. And that's honestly if the customer dies mid-policy. So a major fear of individual Bitcoin owners is how do I pass this on to my heirs, whether it's my spouse, my kids, my estate? How do I make sure that they get my Bitcoin if I'm holding it myself? And so, you know, you're faced with this conundrum of like, well, I could write down where the signing devices are held, but man, I also better write down the PIN, you know, for that as well. But I'll store those two pieces of information maybe in different locations to reduce the risk of that being dangerous information. But then how do I explain to my spouse, you know, go find the first piece of information in the file cabinet and go find the second piece of information in the bank vault. And you're just hoping that if you die, that your spouse or your kids will be able to figure out this treasure map that you've left them. So when you use a vault like ours that has these time locks and a recovery layer, we actually remove that fear entirely. So the scenario there would be you sign up for a vault, you sign up for an insurance policy, everything is fine, you've got your three keys. With us, your beneficiary doesn't need to know anything. They don't need to know where your keys are. They don't need to know your PIN code. They don't need to understand Bitcoin. They don't need to understand anything at all other than you have an insurance policy with AnchorWatch. That's it. Because then what would happen is let's say it's a spouse. The spouse reaches out. They're like, I don't know anything about this, but I know we have Bitcoin. I know it's with you. What do I do? We'd say, okay, on June 15th, we will be able to recover your Bitcoin for you using this recovery layer. So that, of course, they would still have to present death certificate and the proof. You know, prove their own identity as the beneficiary on the policy. But on June 15th, when this comes available, we in Coin Corner could come together and again, move the Bitcoin to a brand new vault. So if that beneficiary wants to remain an AnchorWatch customer, we would get them signed up. We'd create their own vault for them. We would educate them. You know, we would help them through every step of that process. That's no extra charge. That's just a service to our customers to give them that peace of mind that this Bitcoin will end up with whom it's supposed to end up with. If they want to do something else with their Bitcoin, then we'll help them with that. We'll send it to where they choose. But ultimately, then, using this recovery layer is how you can know, you know, with absolute assurance that your heirs will get your Bitcoin and you don't have to expect them to know how to use your signing devices or know where they are or really anything else. And I think, when we were developing this vault, it really was thinking about the heist movies and thinking about all the really unlikely but possible scenarios that involve theft. Was, you know, really what we were thinking about. Wrench attacks are on the rise. They're happening all the time. People get kidnapped and beat up in their own homes. But as I've been talking to customers, man, it really is making sure that their beneficiaries get their Bitcoin. Like, the way that this solves that for them is actually really beautiful because it really is just very, very different from trying to leave a treasure map for somebody who's not Bitcoin native.
I couldn't agree more. And this is something that surprises me in our conversation today is just how rather than pure insurance in the traditional way you think of it, it's like inheritance planning, I think will be probably one of the main drivers of the use of AnchorWatch. I mean, I just see it solves a lot of problems that people struggle with. Becca, I know we want to reserve some time for getting into the company itself, but I do have one question as you're talking about this. Generally, insurance is based on replacement value of the asset. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Bitcoin, I mean, in 2024, it's gone up 150% pretty much. And so Are you looking at it as replacement of the unit of Bitcoin, or how do you get your, you know, and obviously it can go down in value too. So how are the policy premiums adjusted when the price of Bitcoin fluctuates?
Great question. So in theory, first of all, let's theoretically, you could use the unit on either way. You could have a dollar denominated policy. So you have a $10 million policy or you know, you have 100 Bitcoin policy denominated in Bitcoin. Ours are dollar denominated, and I'll walk through an example of what that would mean. But first, I just want to explain why we are starting that way. Right now, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, which are the state insurance commissioners, because it's a state-by-state regulated industry in America, as well as the insurance regulators around the world, have determined that insurers cannot hold Bitcoin on the balance sheet without impairing their balance sheet. So in terms of that pool of collateral that I was talking about, that reserve pool, right now it cannot be in Bitcoin unless they are also holding dollar for dollar in fiat, which means that as an insurance company, you would literally be halving your profitability if you offer Bitcoin denominated policies. So at this point, insurers are not expressing an interest in doing that. Hmm. There is one country, Bermuda, that allows Bitcoin denominated policies. So AnchorWatch does have a Bermuda entity. We're very interested in exploring that. But there are additional kind of challenges of having an offshore company as well. We can't solicit directly to customers. And currently, you know, we wouldn't have the Lloyd's of London name. When we talked to customers, what we heard as we were developing this program is they want Lloyd's. Like offers a lot of peace of mind. If you're a traditional investor, you're coming from a corporate environment, they want Lloyd's of London by name. That's who they asked for. And so we determined that it's better for us to start with Lloyd's of London backing. And give them a very understandable policy. So now then how this actually works and what that understandable policy looks like. I like to use the example of fine art. So, and a fine art policy. These policies are called specie. And so specie is a subset of property and casualty policy. And fine art and expensive jewelry, those are all specie policies. And so if you had a $10 million painting, say, you would buy your painting, you would have it assessed, and then based on the assessed value, you would buy an insurance policy for $10 million. So you have a $10 million painting, you have a $10 million insurance policy. You don't cut off the corner of the painting to pay your insurance policy, right? You pay it with capital, with fiat that you got elsewhere. And if you have a loss, if somebody steals that painting or the building burns down and that painting is destroyed, They can't replace the painting for you. Instead, they would give you fiat to replace the value of that painting. Right. And so our policies actually work very similarly. And one more thing about the painting example as well. Let's say the artist who created that painting is very hot this year. So you assessed it at $10 million, but the art market is hot. That artist in particular is hot. And so halfway through the year, you have an $18 million painting, right? It's actually up to the customer on what they do next. They've paid for $10 million of insurance. They could either call their insurance provider and say, hey, I've become underinsured. I don't like that. I prefer, you know, the peace of mind of knowing I'm fully backed. So I'd like to increase my insurance limit to $18 million. They would pay a prorated amount of insurance premium for the balance of the year to increase their policy to $18 million, and then they would once again be fully insured. Or they could say, you know what? I think it's really unlikely that my painting is going to be destroyed, so I'm just going to stay with my $10 million painting. That's the amount of insurance that I want, so I'll just stay there. And so that's how a dollar-denominated Bitcoin policy works as well. So you start out with a $10 million limit, and it might be you might have opted for full coverage, so full one-to-one insurance when you started. We actually allow you to fluctuate. So you could have $20 million in custody on Trident, but buy a $10 million policy. So that's an option for customers. But let's say you start at one-to-one. So you have $10 million of Bitcoin, you buy a $10 million insurance policy. Halfway through the year, Bitcoin is worth $18 million. It's up to you. You can call us and you can increase your policy size, or you can just stick with the amount of insurance you've paid for. So at the end of the day, it's very fair because you always have the amount of insurance that you've paid for. One thing I would call out too, in just trying to provide a really good value to customers, is our policies, like any property policy, have a deductible. So you can choose between either a 10% deductible or a 25% deductible in the case of loss. So on the, if you have a loss and Bitcoin is worth more than your policy, so you have a $10 million policy, let's say you have $20 million worth of Bitcoin, you will, and you had 10% premium, you would be paid out $9 million. Cool. Okay. So on the upside, your limit is your limit minus your deductible. On the downside, though, on the downside, if you've paid for your $10 million insurance policy, but when a loss occurs, the Bitcoin is worth $6 million, we will actually waive the deductible for you entirely. And so that way, we would pay you out $6 million, no deductible. And then you can very quickly, if you choose, because it's your money, if you choose, you can take your $6 million, immediately go to the exchange and make yourself whole in Bitcoin terms. So there, just because of the timing, there's a little bit of price volatility risk, right? Because you don't know the exact price of the Bitcoin when you get your claim benefit, but it could benefit you, right? Like, you could get your $6 million, and by the time you're ready to go to the exchange, Bitcoin is worth $5 million. And you can more than make yourself whole in Bitcoin terms. It could ding you a little bit in the opposite direction. But one question we get actually pretty frequently about this mechanism is like, hey, but how do I know that you won't kind of game the price and you won't withhold payment for a really long time and pay us during a bear market? And that's, luckily for customers, just not the way insurance works. So AnchorWatch and Lloyd's of London, have a quick standard for determining if a claim is approved or denied, clearly communicating that to customers. And as soon as the claim is approved, payment should be issued very, very quickly, in a matter of days or very few weeks, 2 weeks, something like that. So there's always going to be a little bit of price volatility risk in terms of receiving that benefit payment, but it is minimal based on time standards. And again, you can take that benefit payment right to the exchange and buy back your Bitcoin with it.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a very reasonable and comprehensive coverage, which I'm sure is part of the reason why you got the Lloyd's of London stamp of approval, right? I mean, that's not a small feat, and I hope people appreciate that as well. Getting back to you as a company, Becca, I mean, you're a relatively young company, but you've clearly already accomplished some pretty important milestones. You had your seed round led by 1031 last year, along with some other well-respected backers, some of which we've actually had on the podcast. How important and strategic has it been for you so far to have Bitcoin-focused venture capital as, you know, your early backers? And you see that expanding as well as you grow?
So, I mean, initially, it's been absolutely vital. So having investors who understand not just the tech that we're building, so that's been very helpful, but they also understand the growth opportunity of the asset class. So when we say, hey, the TAM is currently, you know, a trillion and change, but legitimately, we have reason to believe that TAM is going to be 10 trillion in short order. So, you know, when we talk about our aspirations and where we think we can go as a customer and why we think we're viable, not only in the short term, but incredibly viable in the long term, Bitcoin investors already believe that, right? So we don't have to convince them that Bitcoin is a good asset to build a business on. So, I mean, 1031 led the round. Our other investment funds were Axiom BTC, TimeChain, Bitcoin Opportunity Fund, and UTXO Management. So all of them, you know, are experienced Bitcoin investors, and that really has been extremely helpful across the board. And so then when we talk about the other products, so everything we've been talking about today is just really our first product, right? It's our first insured custody model. We are working on multi-institutional custody where customers don't have to hold keys at all, but still can get full insurance. We've got a number of what I think are going to be very well received insured products coming down the pike, all related to Bitcoin. And they really, they just understand all that. And it's been fantastic. As we move forward, you know, they've all been excellent investors, and we'd be really proud for them to continue on with us, for as long as possible. And in terms of our conversations with them, it seems like they feel the same way about us. So that's great. We do expect to raise our Series A this coming spring. And I would love to pull a fund that has insurance investing experience into the mix. So I think that's really my one aspirational thing for this next fundraise is whether it's, you know, very specifically an insurtech fund, or just, you know, a more general fund, but that has historically made a number of significant insurance investments. I just think that would be really helpful. You know, as you mentioned, I think we've accomplished pretty amazing things with getting the full backing with Lloyd's of London syndicates and becoming a cover holder. But at the end of the day, you know, insurance is a complicated industry. It's a massive industry, right? Like trillions and trillions of dollars. And the thing that I didn't really appreciate until entering the industry, and I think a lot of people don't, is that insurance really is investment banking. That is ultimately what the insurance industry is doing. They're saying, look, we have a pool of capital. We can allocate it to you, AnchorWatch, for a certain expectation of loss rates and loss severity and profitability. Or, you know, we could, instead of doing that, we could allocate it to more homeowners policies, or we could allocate it to this other insurtech doing something, right? And so they're really just assessing the investment opportunities out there and choosing where to put their capital. So it really is sophisticated finance. Is what the industry is. So I think just having investors that have that experience, you know, will only help us as we move on and as we expand into being a carrier ourselves, you know, versus a managing general agent, which is our role as a cover holder with Lloyd's of London. It will only help us. So I would love it if that was kind of how the cap table shakes out at the next round.
I tell you, we could go on for another hour. and I definitely want to, I know Israel and I would love to have you back, you know, next spring when you get ready to do your Series A for people who are invested. But just to kind of do a summary of who this is available to today. Mm-hmm. So you are U.S. only? Is that correct?
Yeah. So as present, we are a Lloyd's cover holder in the United States. We already hold our license to distribute in 15 to 20 states, but our ability to expand to additional states is very quick. Like I'm talking like a week, maybe 2 weeks. So really, I'd invite anybody who's interested in the United States to go ahead and reach out to us. You know, we can certainly just expand and add states, and will, with the intention of being nationwide in short order. If you're foreign, unfortunately, we've got probably at least 6 months before we are operating in additional countries directly. I would point out that we can insure LLCs here in the United States. So, you know, if a company or even an individual has a U.S.-based LLC, I can insure that. So that's kind of an indirect way to get access to insured custody in the short term. And I can do policy sizes that start at $250,000. So it's wild to say that that's only 2.5 Bitcoin now, which is crazy, right? So if you have 2.5 Bitcoin, you're already kind of eligible for our policies, and we can write all the way up to 100 million. So the vault, you know, the picture of the vault, I can do 25 million per vault. So that's the insurance limit per vault, but a customer can have multiple vaults up to 100 million. And the only thing to keep in mind there is we need the key holders. So let's say it's a company or a fund that wants to do $100 million. We would need to set up at least 4 vaults. And so we would have to be pulling in key holders. So it's not identical. There can be some overlap, but that's really kind of the only asterisk to get up to that $100 million. And I would throw out as well that if you're a large entity, a custodian, and you're looking for much larger policies beyond that 100 million, you should still reach out because we're able to broker you and bring you directly to Lloyd's. And I think we're a fantastic option for you to consider because if you're looking for Bitcoin custody insurance, effectively, you know, with Rob, my co-founder and our tech team, we're uniquely positioned to underwrite your tech and come in and look at your own tech stack and your own key management and potentially can assemble very large policies for customers as well. So that's all for custody insurance. And that's, you know, that's live as of today. So encourage really any customers from that 250 all the way up to, say, the 100 million level to go ahead and reach out now. And they could be, they could have insured custody in place within a week. It's a pretty quick process. If you're looking for other policies, like E&O, D&O, things like that, companies related to Bitcoin and crypto often have challenges getting those policies. We can broker those policies for you as well. So really, if you're looking for Bitcoin coverage, just go ahead and reach out, and we'll take care of you.
And probably also for, we do have a global audience that listens to our broadcast. So to go ahead and reach out to you because you will be exploring opportunities beyond the United States. So just to get on the list.
Absolutely. And I would love to know where the interest is, right? Mm-hmm. So if I hear just from one random person that they would like coverage in that country, you know, it may or may not be top of my priority list. But if I am repeatedly hearing that, hey, there's a lot of Bitcoin that's looking to be insured in this country, then it's going to move up in my priority list. And I'm going to work with Lloyd's and the local regulators to get that coverage in place as quickly as possible.
Well, you know, Becca, I mean, what you're doing at AnchorWatch is, I mean, it's extremely important as the industry matures. And, you know, I think it's no understatement to say that you're truly disrupting the insurance and Bitcoin industry with your offering. So first of all, congrats. And, you know, I think it does bring a lot of peace of mind to all of your customers. And one last point, you know, just kind of out of my own curiosity. I mean, do you get the sense that Bitcoin is disrupting the property insurance market? Because being digital in nature, I mean, the properties of Bitcoin and the being so portable provides for a pretty, you know, risk mitigated coverage, I would assume, for the insurers, right? I mean, I remember when I worked in catastrophe risk management, we'd talk about these 1 in 50, 1 in 100 year events. And, you know, now, a Florida hurricane or a California wildfire or earthquake isn't necessarily covered or isn't necessarily correlated, to the...
Correct.
To the exposure of those keys, right? So, I mean, I don't want to get too off topic here, but...
I mean, honestly, like, it's actually a great point. And if you're interested in insurance as an industry and why I'm calling it banking, like, you're really getting right to the point, right? So, and what you're calling out is part of the reason we were able to secure Lloyd's of London.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I like to, you know, think of insurance capacity, the amount of money that's available to back whatever. Let's think of it as a pie, right? So there's a total amount of dollars that are out there for insurance. And then a large portion of that is property, right? property and casualty. And let's say homeowners is a large portion of that, and auto is a portion of that, and inland marine, and then a sliver, and, you know, so we've got our pie here, a sliver of the property is specie. And so now we're coming in and we're saying, hey, Bitcoin insurance is part of that specie pie. And right now, it's still pretty small, right? So it's a small sliver of a small sliver of this pie. Part of, I think, our role over the next, not too long, over the next year or two, is to demonstrate and prove out our hypothesis, which this is a high quality insurance product that we think will be a good, you know, a good choice for the insurance industry to allocate their funds to. Why? Because we've built such robust tech that we believe the loss rates will be low. And so what we hope, maybe contrary to another business that's always looking to raise prices, what we actually hope is that over the next few years, we will pull down prices because we'll be able to say, see, like, see, our customers actually, we've built something so incredibly safe that losses are very infrequent. And therefore, insurers, you should actually reduce the cost of capital because the investment for you is so solid. And so what I expect to happen in the relative short term is hopefully, I mean, I don't know, but hopefully Bitcoin insurance will become more affordable, but that pie slice will start to expand. And so maybe, you know, it goes from this much of a pie to this much of a pie. How big it ultimately gets, I think, is still a question, because at the end of the day, you know, Bitcoin is going to grow as an asset class to be massive, right? And so is the insurance industry going to say, you know what, we're just going to walk away from homeowners in total and only do, we're going to take all our capital and put it in Bitcoin? I don't know. I think it's really great, as you point out, as an uncorrelated investment for them. It helps to offset the hurricane and wildfire losses for them in the short term. But at the end of the day, we will at some point, I think, exhaust the amount of fiat that is available to back Bitcoin insurance. And when that happens, that's where those Bitcoin denominated policies come into play. Because then we can say, you know what, now, and hopefully, you know, we'll push regulators to allow it to be an admitted asset. We think that's, you know, good for the insurance companies and good for the consumers who own Bitcoin. And so eventually we can say, look, now when we've exhausted the amount of fiat available for Bitcoin insurance, now we also have Bitcoin acting as the reserve for these policies. And when we do that, I consider it pretty much infinitely expandable. And why is that? Because if you are sitting on a large amount of capital, so let's say you're a fund or a large company who has a massive Bitcoin treasury, it's sitting there in cold storage. You're not earning yield on that Bitcoin. So if you wanted, you could take some of that Bitcoin and you could invest it in insurance risk. Right. So by definition, it's not risk free. It's certainly not risk free yield because you are by definition insuring, underwriting insurance risk. But by the time we roll this out, we'll have proven loss rates. Right. So we'll have predictable returns. And, you know, you could put your Bitcoin in a vehicle where we, AnchorWatch, can actually pay those investors for the use of their capital. But instead of investing it in a rehypothecation strategy where you're investing it to get yield, but the way they're earning that yield is by trading it out the back door. So you might be earning yield, but it's high risk yield, right? Whereas if you're investing in insurance risk, it's low risk yield, right? So, you know, it's just there. It's acting as collateral. Losses can and will happen, but we've got actuarial tables forecasting them. We have proven performance. You should have, you know, predictability in what those returns are. And I think once we get to that level of maturity in the industry, I think the vast majority of Bitcoin will be insured Bitcoin, because why not? The cost will come down. Bitcoin owners will be motivated to invest in the insurance because they can earn yield. And so it's actually extremely beneficial as a flywheel for the industry. And I think we're at the very beginning of that process. It's really cool.
The very beginning, because this is your launch week. So again, we're so honored that you're with us, that the timing worked out where you actually have a deliverable that you can be talking to clients and get them set up on the insurance with AnchorWatch immediately. But we really appreciate your time. Any closing words?
No, just, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed this. And we're really excited to have been talking to customers all this week. So people have been kind of reaching out proactively, asking to learn more and getting people signed up. So we're in that fire hose phase of launch where we're finding our feet, and it's been really fun and really rewarding to hear from customers directly. So if anybody is interested in getting insured custody, you can shoot me an email, Becca@AnchorWatch.com or agent@AnchorWatch.com, just reach out and we'll get you more information, talk about what you need. And if you're interested, we can get you signed up in short order. So thanks really for having me on this week.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd truly appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening, as this helps others find us, which is especially important for a new podcast. And as a reminder, our content is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only, and is not to be considered investment advice or recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the podcast. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service, 100% reserve custody, Bitcoin-only financial services company. For your next Bitcoin purchase, use our exclusive link, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.